Live from the capital of Raider Nation, Las Vegas, Nevada. It's Silver and Black Today, your daily dose of all things Las Vegas Raiders football. News, views, guests, and your phone calls are all part of the game plan. There's only one nation, and it listens here. Now your host, Scott Gulbranson.
Welcome to a Friday edition of Silver and Black Today here on Raider Nation Radio, powered by our good friends Sam and Ash, the injury attorneys. Call them anytime, 702-820-1234 is the number. Thanks for being with us, everybody. This is Scott Gulbranson. You'll have a time to get involved in the show. Get online so we can put you on the air. 702-365-9200 is the number. And right off the top, we want to get to the topic that has occupied Raider Nation since last night and, of course, through today, and that concerns our story by our next guest, and that is Vic Tafer from The Athletic, veteran NFL and Raiders reporter who now joins us. And, Vic, I hope you're doing well on this Friday. I know you haven't had much to do, right?
Nah, it's been pretty quiet on my end.
Well, I want to get into your story clearly because it's created some ripple effect, obviously, around Raider Nation, around the NFL, as folks have taken hold of it and read it. If you haven't read it on The Athletic, spend the money. It's about the cost of a cup of coffee at Starbucks. Go subscribe to it. But just let me recap for everybody, Vic. In your story, you talk about an incident that took place in Week 16. Nelson Aguilar, of course, who had a great season for the Raiders as a free agent, first-year guy with the Raiders, came in, and apparently after the Dolphins loss, which we all know ended in the most horrific way possible, came in, and according to your sources and his teammates that you talked to, came in and said, hey, listen, the team was selfish, it didn't work hard enough, and that they had quit against the Dolphins, and I'm paraphrasing your piece here, as well as the previous two losses. And then you said, quote, he said there was no accountability in the locker room, and on winning teams, players play for one another and the coaches. So, Vic, talk about this a little bit and kind of the significance of it, because the title of your piece is about accountability and that falls at the top with John Gruden and Mike Mayock. But in the teammate, the players and the sources you talked to that were present for this, was this something that was normal? Was this something out of the normal? Was it frustration just by a player, or was it something else?
Yeah, I don't think it's normal. I mean, I'd heard about it a little bit when it happened the week after. I didn't know all the details. I just heard that, you know, some players have spoken out, him especially the loudest, and he was the first one to talk, and you know, it was kind of a silence after he talked. I didn't really think much about it, but since then I've talked to more people about it, and it kind of came out. And again, that key word you mentioned is accountability, because it was funny because when Nick Morrow mentioned it at the last day of the season, I thought it was a pretty telling quote, how he thought there was no accountability among the players and coaches, and Mike Mack said again the other day, and then I was talking to players about, and we got more into what Nelly said, that was also a big thing of what he said. And he was actually the first, if you look back at the timeline, he was actually the first guy to really bring it up and make it a big issue. So I think it is a key thing for this team, looking at what happened down the stretch. They obviously collapsed, and that was definitely a common thread that people thought that some guys weren't accountable, both players and coaches.
Yeah, and I think to me, in reading your piece and how you laid it out according to your sources, the reaction that's shocking to me is that veteran players didn't say anything, according to your sources. And you have a guy with a Super Bowl ring. I mean, you know, people in Raider Nation, they know about Nelson Aguilar before he got to the Raiders and about the drop season, all that stuff. But this is a guy who performed well in the biggest game you can play in, which is the Super Bowl. He has a Super Bowl ring. And the fact that no one responded, and to your point, Vic, I find it so interesting that anybody who follows the team closely would be surprised by your story and what was said, because like you mentioned, there's a timeline here. You go back, Derek Carr, it might've been week 13 or somewhere around there. Derek Carr talked about commitment. He talked about a quote unquote lack of juice on the team for a playoff push. And then Alec Ingold talked about consistency and commitment. And then Mike Mayock, in two interviews with my colleague Vinny Bonsignore and with your colleague Tashawn Reed down at the Senior Bowl, he mentioned that young players needed to commit more. They needed to get in the weight room. I mean, he called out his players. And then lastly, I add in, because I was I was vocal about it at the time when a lot of Raider Nation felt the Raiders were being treated unfairly around the COVID protocol stuff that had happened, especially Trent Brown. And again, that's to me is a commitment and control and sort of accountability within the organization from the top to the players. The timeline supports it. That's why I'm not sure anyone would be surprised. Are you surprised that there are people out there who didn't see that?
No, I mean, people obviously see things different ways, so I can't, you know, speak for all of them how they see things. But I think as far as the silence goes after Nelson talked, I mean, that to me, I can kind of see that a little bit, because after the lock, you know, when you're in the game, in the locker room after a game, it's definitely a very raw, emotional scene. Guys are really pissed. Some guys I've talked to since the story posted, some players agreed with Nelly, some obviously didn't, but it wasn't like you really wanted that moment to jump out and say anything, because, again, most of the guys are really pissed or they're sad. It's just, somebody, there's a horrible way to lose that game, and all the guys are still in shock. So I think that's why, I mean, some people remember it differently, but I think, I mean, the surprise, obviously the eeriness of the silence after he talked is definitely – it's noteworthy, but I can now, looking back, see why some players didn't jump in and say something, because they also were probably still pretty raw emotionally.
Sure, and you know that. I mean, I have not been in NFL locker rooms like you have, but I've been in locker rooms where after a tough loss, yeah, guys come in and they're vocal about it. They yell, they scream, they do whatever. But then, you know, we also hear that this was from other reports that this might have happened a couple times with different players doing it, and that it was somewhat normal. And to me, if you have a lot of guys coming in the locker room, it doesn't matter how disappointing a loss is, but if you have multiple weeks with players coming in and talking about a lack of accountability, I don't think that's normal at all. Do you?
No, I can't imagine that's true. I saw the tweet and I was surprised by it, but I don't think this is normal. I think definitely just the tone and again, I think to me, Nelson comes out looking very good in the story. I think definitely, and talk to players I've talked to, they love Nelson. They love what he said. I mean, most of them respect him a lot. He worked very hard. He came in as the fourth receiver and really earned a bigger role and had a huge year. And obviously was also like a mentor to the other guys in their team, other receivers in their team. So he's very well respected by the coaches and by the players. So I think what he said carried some juice. And I think it was surprising because of the directness of it. I just think that some of the things he said, kind of like we've mentioned, have brought this whole issue of accountability kind of up to the forefront. Now it's kind of been carried on since then as a kind of theme by other players and now Mike Mayock.
Yeah, and I don't think that's why I said I was not surprised at all, because, I mean, you look at the situation and you covered it. And I know a lot of times you talk to folks and you can't talk about it publicly or even write about it because you have inside sources and you talk to players and so on. But the Trent Brown situation and the frustration that was happening there. And yes, he had injuries. Yes, he had COVID and he had that incredible thing happen to him in Cleveland. But to me, that's indicative of an issue around commitment. And you're right. I mean, you call upon that, and I learned in the business world, Vic, that look, when it comes to leadership, it doesn't matter what everyone else, quote unquote, below you does. If you're the leader, if you're the CEO, if you're the head coach, or if you're the GM, the buck stops on your desk. And so when you look at the Raiders year, how it unfolded, and this is really what you get into the story. I think people get lost in your Aguilar story at the top of the story. But when you go down, you make some really significant points here that go back to that. And that is, you look at the disappointing season and everybody points to the defense, rightfully so. But the defense itself struggled because the Raiders went out and they made a lot of free agent acquisitions, and those free agent acquisitions didn't pan out. We've seen Mike Mayock start to take some accountability for that, which I think is good and he deserves credit for. But is this something that's maybe perhaps more pervasive than we had thought originally?
Yeah, I think you look at free agents not only this year, but also last year. Now, the rookies this year, I think, definitely have come in and not done what they were thought they should do. I mean, definitely the accomplishments have been kind of lacking as far as what they're brought in to do. So I think you look at what's going on in the building. Is there the right motivation? Are guys putting in the time? Or is there like a solid leadership core above these guys? I think John's tried bringing leaders. As we mentioned in the past, Jason Witten, obviously that was why he was brought in this year. He tried, there was a few years back with Derek Johnson and Leon Hall. He's tried to bring in guys who can lead. The problem is he's bringing guys in who are kind of past their prime. I think you have to have guys who do it on the field and also to speak it. You got to like be a vocal leader, but also back it up. Like, I think we have some guys on the team right now who are kind of quieter, lead by example types, which is fine. But I think in this case, this year, you probably needed some more vocal guys like Nelson was. And Nelson's not a vocal guy. Nelson's usually pretty quiet. So that, for him, that's why it was so unusual for him to say that kind of stuff, because he didn't say much. So I think you probably need someone a little more vocal on a regular basis, kind of to make sure guys were on the same page and definitely looking towards the same goal.
Yeah, and we've had, and by the way, Vic Tafer from The Athletic is our guest here on Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio. And Vic, we had Nelly on the show before, and he's such a positive guy too. So for him to get to that point, I'm sure it was a lot of frustration and seeing what's around. The fact that he's been on various teams, including a Super Bowl winner, means a lot. When you look at this, though, a lot of people, of course, you know, you have that contingent of folks out there that immediately, when the issue of leadership comes up, and we'll talk about John Gruden and Mike Mayock a second, but they go right to the quarterback. Like, the quarterback has to be the vocal leader. That's not the case. I mean, I was watching the preview of the Al Davis versus the NFL, and you look at some of those guys back in the locker room in the 70s and the 80s when Gene Upshaw was the guy who'd get up in the locker room and kind of take control and be that vocal leader. Is that the type of guy, you know, you don't have to focus on one position. The leadership and that veteran leadership of maybe a guy in his prime, that can come from any position, correct?
Yeah, I think you need someone who players respect, and they see the hard work he puts in, they see the example on the field, and also he's kind of their presence in the locker room and definitely talking to guys and making sure guys are motivated. And definitely, I mean, you don't need a lot of motivation in the NFL, but you need some. I think you definitely need someone who can kind of yell at you from time to time and kind of make sure you're on the right path. So, I mean, that's kind of lacking in their locker room for years, and Derek definitely has gotten better at it. I don't know if he's... that's something he wants to do on a regular basis, but I don't think this goes back to Derek. I think, like, you know, on social media with Raiders Twitter, you could say anything. It could be about the weather, a movie you saw. All of a sudden, it goes back to Derek Carr, like if he's the guy or not. So I'm not sure that's really the issue with this story. I think it's just a more of a overall look at from the bottom, from the top down, from John Gruden to Mike Mayock down. Because, yeah, John Gruden could have said something after Nelson talked, and that was definitely something I thought was surprising. He didn't, like, reply to it or say something about what he thought about what Nelson said. So I think this is more of an overall kind of there's some issues, I think, with the structure, and I think that's probably the reason why some of these guys who come here, they don't stay. They leave, and they don't really want to, you know, build things here. I think it's kind of an issue as far as having some continuity in the locker room.
Well, yeah, and that's key, because to build a winner, I mean, you talk about other teams in the AFC, and you mentioned them in your story, teams like Buffalo, teams like Cleveland, that have really started to kind of get some momentum after they had to strip down and rebuild. And you look at the Raiders in the draft as well. They have some players, the jury's still out, but they have not had the impact. You've had a lot of draft capital, and so after that period of time, you would expect the team to make the jump, but they haven't. So when you look at that and you start to look at, for example, Mike Mayock, who you talk about in your piece as well, does this put a lot more pressure on him, not only because of the year they had in going 8-8 and it was clearly a disappointment, but also when this sort of stuff comes out, when he publicly talks about how he drafted Henry Ruggs and they knew exactly what he was, yet they skipped over other receivers that might have been a little more advanced and ready to play?
Yeah, I think it definitely does. I think definitely Mike needs to have a better he needs to have a better draft this year, needs to do better free agency. He needs some of his guys who are back from last year to make a step up, like the guys he mentioned, the guys on secondary, young guys, secondary, some of the free agent guys from last year, like Corey Littleton. Those guys have to play better, and I think the hope is they will under Gus Bradley. We'll see, but definitely a fresh voice can't hurt. But he needs those guys to take a step up. He needs to add some more talent that has impact this year, because last year the guys he brought in didn't have an impact.
No, Vic Tafer from The Athletic is our guest here on Silver and Black today. And Vic, we talk about John Gruden, and in essence, you know, he confirmed the story to me by the way he responded to you, just by saying he loved Nelson Aguilar, because if it wasn't a true story, I'm sure he would have told you in some words we can't use on the radio that it wasn't. But when you look at John Gruden, I think fans look at it and say, well, geez, this guy's got a 10-year contract, and here it is 3 years in, and they've made progress, but not as much as people would like, and I'm sure as Mike Mayock said, they haven't made the progress that they need to make. What does this do as far as the pressure on John Gruden? Is he ever going to feel pressure? It's not that I'm out here saying that John Gruden needs to be on a hot seat or anything. That's not what I'm saying. But that dynamic, because of the relationship between him and Mark Davis and the length of the contract, how does that change things going into a situation like this where you clearly have some issues that are fixable, but that you need to fix them pretty quickly?
Yeah, I don't think Mark's right now concerned about John Gruden. I think he looks at, obviously there's issues, obviously, on top of the accountability. And this year the COVID thing was a mess. They had like the second most COVID cases in the league. Well, I'm not sure why that happened, if that was, you know, if that was also a lack of accountability or a lack of oversight. But that was definitely a fact. They definitely had the second most COVID cases. So I think no matter you look at the season, all the things that went wrong, but you can still look at it if you're Mark Davis. You know what? We were a game better. We were 8-8. We were better than last year. We beat the Chiefs, which was a couple of years ago had been unfathomable, beating Patrick Mahomes. If we did that, we beat the Saints. We've done some good wins. So I think you can, for Mark Davis, you know what? There were a lot of problems, but I can still see some progress. Derek Carr got better. So I think you can look at things as, you know what? We still have a chance to make the playoffs next year. And I think you have to. I think that's definitely going to be not only a goal, but it has to be kind of a make it or bust kind of deal. I think they definitely have to look at it that way. So I think Mark Davis can still have confidence in what John Gruden's doing going forward till next season.
Well, and the confidence there at the top, obviously, with the owner and the coach and in essence, the CEO of the operation on the football side of things, John Gruden. But you've talked to these players, and these players, when they talk to you in confidence, how much of this accountability issue, is it a situation where it's an issue and they feel like, boy, it's got to be addressed? Or is it taking on maybe a bigger sense of momentum and that they're getting really concerned about it?
I think the players I talked to today about the story we've called, and I think they look at it more as locker room issue, like something they have to fix. And no one's blaming Gruden or Mayock. I think you look at it as like, you know what, that's something we have to definitely do better of. And they all, again, all of them said they love what Nelson said. I think they definitely, again, they think he was a great teammate, and they want more of that. They want more of that passion from other guys. I think that's something they'll look at. And the problem is there are some of the younger guys. You mentioned the draft picks the last few years. Like guys like Max Crosby, I think will be a leader at some point. He's definitely made strides in the area. I think he'll have a bigger role. I think Lesko Clefell could be that guy. So you have younger guys who definitely can step into bigger shoes as we go forward.
Yeah, and that to me has been an issue, Vic, all season long. And I've called it out, not because they're not good kids or they're not good players, but maturity issues. Even with what Mike Mayock said about Henry Ruggs, and Henry Ruggs kind of taking it and use it in social media, the quote and all that stuff, which, I get. Listen, you and I are a little longer in the tooth than these young guys who live and die by social media. But I think those are the types of things where when they go out in free agency and they go get the talent that they need, they really need to be selective and get to what you said early on in this interview, which is you got to get guys who are vocal, who demand that accountability in the locker room amongst the players, because the players do have to. You talked to guys like Phil Villapiano and those guys from the golden era of the Raiders back in the 60s and 70s and 80s, and they all say, look, we didn't need a coach to tell us what to do. We took care of each other. If there was a problem in the locker room, we took care of it. The coaches didn't need to do it. Is that going to put even more pressure on them to find the right free agent, not just a guy who can play ball, but a guy who's going to lead in that locker room too?
I think so. I think definitely that'd be a key focus from this offseason. And also, I was going to say, I've given them a hard time to the Raiders for using the COVID stuff as an excuse, but I will say it is valid in the sense that you had guys in and out of the locker room since the beginning of training camp. There wasn't really a sense of continuity on the roster as far as having the same guys there every single week, every single day. So, like John Abram was in and out of the locker room all season long. Trent Brown, he mentioned. The guys you're counting on weren't always there. So I think I can definitely see where there were issues this year where you probably wouldn't have had those in a normal season.
Yeah, Vic, no, just great work, though, man. We appreciate you taking time. It sounds to me like, these are issues. And I know some Raider fans who get very defensive about their team aren't happy about the piece because of the issues there. But the only way you improve on issues and you correct them so that you can move past them and continue to grow is to address them. And I think your story hopefully will help shed some light on that. So, Vic, thanks again for spending some time for us today. We appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
All right, there you go. Vic Tafer, right from the man who wrote the story that kind of created all the buzz today around the Nelson Agholor incident in Week 16. But we want to hear what you guys have to say. 702-365-9200 is the number. And again, I think, look, things like this, these are not, I've seen some people tweeting out negative things at Vic, calling him a liar. Even Vinny Bonsignor, who we're going to have later on the show from the RJ, who has a little bit of a different twist on things, calling him a liar because he confirmed the story as well. Look, it's not about lying. This is actually something that when it comes to light, yeah, it should be taken care of in the locker room, but it's not. but it's correctable. It's not like it's a fatal issue. This is not like they've lost the team completely. This is just issues that these players who really want to win and they want this team and this franchise to be better, they express their opinions. And yeah, they're not going to come out on the record and say, hey, here's eight of us. We talked to Vic Tafer and told him about what happened. No, they're not going to come out and do that. So when you say unnamed sources, these are players. Vic's been doing this a long time, and other people are reporting it as well. So I think that when you look at this, if I'm a Raider fan, I'm looking at it and I'm concerned. There's no question you should be, but you shouldn't go one way over the top and be like, oh, see, they can't control anything. It's terrible leadership. Yes, the leadership has to get better. And yes, there has to be more accountability throughout the organization. But you've already seen Mike Mayock say that. He has come and done a mea culpa to say, look, we need to be more accountable. He's called out players, which you can agree with or disagree with. Some guys do it, some guys don't. But I think that the issue here is it's correctable. And I think Vic brought up a really great point towards the end of his interview with us, which was about, look, this locker room, you had a lot of people coming in and out, and you had a very young locker room. A lot of these young guys have the talent to be good NFL players. They have the ability, they have the desire, but they might not have the maturity and the accountability yet to lead. You have to learn how to lead. It doesn't just come. Some people, yes, it does come from just inside. You know how to do it. Some people are born with that. Others need to learn. And I think that's why it's important that they go out and they get veterans who can come in and not only make a difference from a football perspective, but teach these young bucks how to lead. And I think they can. So don't go over the top either way on this one. I just don't think it's smart. All right, we're going to go right on the phone lines to hear what you have to think about all of this with the Nelson Aguilar story and with the idea that the Raiders locker room needs to hold each other more accountable. First, we go up for 211. 211, you're on with Scott here on Silver and Black Today.
Hey, what's up, man? Hey, look, I love what you guys do. I'm calling because I called earlier on
Clay and Pritch, the morning show. Yeah.
Right. And I was concerned. I'm still concerned. I'm going to say it's concerning because it's, like I said earlier, Aguilar is a journeyman receiver at this point. And it's like, well, why didn't anybody else step up? And they said, you know, they said Carr did and whatnot. Okay, I understand all of that. But it's just like, why? To me, you know, it's just bothersome and it's concerning because these guys all preach about bringing people in that love the game, and now there's a lot of stories getting out that people's work ethic and nutrition's being questioned. You got a guy that ballooned up to 400 pounds on Mayock's Gruden's watch, and that's just, it's alarming to me because you say these things can be fixed, right? And I'm not sensitive to what stories get out about the Raiders because that's the one thing about some of the Raider Nation. Their fandom blinds them, and you can't say nothing. You can't even debate anything against him, because I got friends like that, and I'm a diehard, a Raider lifestyler. It's not a fandom; it's a lifestyle. And you can't discuss anything because it's so defensive. Because the Raiders can do no wrong in their eyes. So I get what you're saying on that part, and I get the fans. But at the same time, you say this can be fixed, but we've been trying to fix these kind of things for two decades now, bud. That's why some of us, a lot of us, are irritated and frustrated.
Yeah, 211, great call as always, man. I appreciate it. And I understand your point there is about being frustrated. I think that every individual situation, though, can be different. And I go back again to what Vic said towards the end there, which is you have a young locker room. And so you need some leadership there. And so it's going to be up to this organization. It's going to be up to John Gruden and Mike Mayock to go out and get the right guy to correct that, to make sure that there is accountability in there and that these guys hold each other accountable, because it didn't happen this year. It didn't happen down the stretch. Obviously, Nelson Aguilar did this. We've heard that other people have done it too. So they have to address it. But my point is, I don't think it's a fatal flaw. It's not like this has been happening for 4 years under a certain coach and then it just festers and festers and festers. That's happened before. I think now it's happened. You need to address it, and they need to do what they can to address it very quickly, especially this offseason. All right, we're going out to Rich. Rich, you're on with Scott here on Silver and Black Today.
Hey, what's up, Scott? Hey, good interview with Vic.
Thank you, man.
Yeah, shout out to 11, though, man, because I'm on the same, you know, I'm on the same page as him. It is what it is, you know. Who knows what really happened in that locker room, but it all starts from the top to the bottom, you know. Shout out Mark Davis. He got us a stadium. I'm not going to bash him, you know, but Gruden just, yeah, man. I don't know, man. I was riding with Gruden so tough. But you know what? You want to know why we lack accountability on this team? Because he knows he has a 10-year contract. He knows he's not going anywhere. And that rubs off on the team. You know what I mean? Gruden is full of excuses. I mean, you know, he came back. This is, you know, what's gonna happen next year? Are we gonna make the playoffs? Are you gonna keep rolling with Carr? You know, Carr, he had a good year. You know, everybody's talking about he had a good year. He did, Scott. He did have a good year, but he's going all year. Hey, can he win a playoff game? Can he get us to the playoffs? I know the defense sucks, but hey, we were 6-3 with the defense that we had, and it collapsed again. Because of Gruden, I'm not going to blame Carr because I'm tired of the whole Carr debate. I'm putting this on Gruden. This 2 years in a row, you know, you collapse. I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense to me at all. And sooner or later, you have to win football games. Derek Carr has to win football games. Fix the defense this year. You know, do what you have to do. Mike Mayock has to get players in here that contribute. You know what I mean? Like, you have five first-round picks and not one of them hit. Josh Jacobs did, yeah, but you could grab a running back in the third round that would produce like Josh Jacobs. You know, let's keep it 100 right here, all right? You know, so who knows what's going to happen next year? I know that Derek Carr is going to be the quarterback. I just want to win. Like 211 said, it's been 20 years of this, bro. I'm tired of this. You know, ain't no more, oh, let's get it's 2 more years with Carr or with Gruden. Nah, man, if they ain't going to put it up next year, you know what I mean? Either win or shut up. You know what I mean? Right on, Scott. Yeah. Appreciate you.
Yeah, Rich, thanks for the call, man. And a couple things. One is it's clear. I mean, listen, John Gruden's in charge. So it doesn't matter. When things go well, you can give him credit, along with the players and the organization. And when things don't go well, the buck stops there. I don't think that he would tell you differently. I understand what you're saying about, hey, he's got a 10-year contract. He's got nothing to worry about. With all due respect to you, Rich, because you have a great, great passion, and I don't disagree with anything else you said. On that one, I do, though, because John Gruden does not want to just go collect a paycheck. I don't believe that for one minute. He's a competitor. You can see it in him. You know, after a game when there was a tough loss, you can see it in his face, even though we could only do it via Zoom as media this year. He wants to win. So it's his name. It's his reputation. It's his legacy. He doesn't want to go out there and lose. So he's not going to go and just say, well, I'm getting 10-year contract. I can do whatever the heck I want. Now, does that mean there isn't adjustments to approaches? I don't think so. I think there is. And I think that that's what he has to do, because I do think while he doesn't have the pressure of losing his job, the pressure on him and on the franchise to produce a winner on the field in their new market in Las Vegas, which was cut short this year because nobody could go to the games. Now, next year, you got to keep all those people who bought tickets. You got to keep them in the fold. You got to keep them excited. You have to get the market excited about it. And that only comes with winning. You just got to do it, right? And so from that perspective, I agree with you. And I think the accountability issue is really, really something that they can address and they can do. And I understand what you're saying about the 20 years of misery. No question. It's got to end now. It's got to end next year. I've said anything below the playoffs and maybe even a win in the playoffs would be a disappointment. So I think we're on the same page. I got to hear what the rest of you have to say as well. What do you think of the whole story? What did you think of the interview with Vic Taffer? And what do you think about accountability on this team and what you now know based on Vic's story and others? Give us a call, 702-365-9200. I will get you right on the air. We're going to take a break. We come back, I'll get to your calls, and then we're going to shift gears a little bit. Hour number two, I'm going to take as many calls as I can get. This hour we have coming up at 2:40, Michael Troiano, attorney Michael Troiano. We're going to talk about, we do the police blotter with him, Chad Wheeler, the guy in Seattle. Wow. We're going to talk about that situation a little bit. And then we will also, next hour, top of the next hour, 3 o'clock, Cody Benjamin from CBS Sports will be with us. We're going to talk more about the QB carousel in the NFL, including the Deshaun Watson. Cody thinks that the Raiders are a legitimate landing spot for Deshaun Watson, too. So we'll talk to him about that. You're with Scott here on Silver and Black Today, only on Raider Nation Radio.
From Stabler to Plunkett and Allen to Jacobs, we've got your Raiders covered on Silver and Black Today. Here's your host, Scott Culbranson.
Welcome back. Friday edition of Silver and Black today. Again, thanks to Vic Tafer from The Athletic for joining us to talk about his story about accountability with the Raiders and, of course, the Nelson Agholor story that's been the talk of Raider Nation today. Great to get insight from him. Would love to hear what you thought of the interview and what you think of the situation. Give us a call, 702-365-9200 is the Raider Nation radio listener hotline. We'll get you on the air as well. If you'd like to, if you're a little nervous, or you don't want to talk, or you're at work, or you're with your significant other and you don't want them to know you're thinking about football, you can text us, the Sam and Ash text line, 69187. Put the letters R&R for Raider Nation Radio, your question and your name, and I will read that on the air if you don't want to call in. But love to have you call in, 702-365-9200 about this issue. We're going out to one of our all-pro callers. That, of course, is Raider Mike here in Las Vegas. Raider Mike, what's going on today?
Gentlemen, what's up? Man,
hey, man,
Nevada's been nuked for the first time in 70 years. Unbelievable. Anyway, perfect time for Al versus the NFL to drop. I'm serious. This city, they don't understand our legacy. Mm-hmm. I raised in Oakland, moved to L.A., and doing sports radio calls like this at a Raider Mike since 1993, I think. I started with Michael Thompson on Rip City Radio. So, for the past 20 years, though, ESPN Florida and Rip City, and now you guys, it's been embarrassing to defend us. It really has. It's been a gut punch to take the crap I take from the New England homer on ESPN in Florida to the Denver homer on Rip City Radio. It hurts. This special is going to show, while we had gut punches for, four straight AFC championships, mm-hmm. until we finally punched through and then punched so in the mouth. So, anyway, that old school Raiders, it was all about accountability. They all looked each other in the eye. If the other one was not doing their job, they got in each other's face. And they hit the other team so hard. They were intimidated. That was the whole point of Raider football. That was Al Davis. We're going to intimidate you. We're going to – Jack Tatum's going to clean your clock. You come across the middle. Sammy White's helmet flying 15 feet in the air. That Super Bowl was over on that play.
Yep.
We're in their head. It was done. I mean, the way I played sports, same way. I'm going to hit you so hard. All conference football, baseball, soccer. I'm going to take you out. It's a lifestyle. I want to be a world champion after their second Super Bowl. So I actually set the world record at Asteroids. I was still number 11. You guys can check it out on Twin Galaxies. Anyway, you can hear the frustration from all of us. It's going to get straight because guess what? The guy who blew this thing up, the only one in there with a ring.
Mm-hmm.
I want him signed. Nelly needs to be signed. Give him his 11 mil. He's worth every penny. That's about it. You can hear I'm frustrated. Taking my kid to Disney World for 18th. Leaving Vegas tonight.
Nice.
Great show. Keep up. I'll be calling you from the road. Peace out.
Raider Mike, thanks as always, man. And no, you bring up good points there. And I did. I did a pre-screening of Al Davis versus the NFL actually earlier today. And you're absolutely right. It's so well done, and we're going to talk about that more in depth next week before it airs. But you're right. It's setting the tone, and that's the one thing I noticed. I was talking about with Vic earlier, which was watching that, and there's some footage in there you haven't seen in a really long time, and some of it I think was unseen forever because it was in the NFL Films archives. But those first two Super Bowl teams, there's a couple cutaways in the locker room during those seasons where it's Gene Upshaw, and Gene Upshaw is preaching, right? And I think that's what you need in the current Raiders locker room. And there are leaders in the Raiders locker room. There's different types of leadership. There's guys who lead differently. You can't make a guy lead one way if that's not his natural way of leading, okay? So what you do in an organization, or in this case, a football team like the Raiders, is you have to go out and find the guys who can be that vocal leader, that guy who's going to put a boot in your ass when you don't do what you're supposed to, especially on that defensive side of the ball. It goes for the whole locker room, but on the defensive side of the ball, you got a lot of young players. And so if you have those young players, the accountability that you have to develop, that I think is the takeaway. You know, everybody gets caught up on Nelly calling, coming in and calling people names and stuff. You're missing the point if that's what you focus on. Okay, and you're right about him, Raider Mike. That's the kind of guy. He's the only guy in that locker room, I believe, with a ring. Okay, he's got a Super Bowl ring. You can say all you want about him. He's got a Super Bowl ring. And he played well in the Super Bowl himself. So you need guys like that, that have that passion, who are going to be the vocal leader, because it is not coaching. You can blame Gruden, and yes, leadership does own it all. There's no question. But they have to be accountable to one another. For a team sport to work, for a team to win, to become a champion, you talk to any of those old school Raiders that you all love so much. To a man, they will tell you the same thing. If I got out of line, it wasn't the coach, it wasn't the GM, it wasn't even Al Davis. It was my teammates who made me accountable. It was my teammates who got in my face and corrected me or kicked my ass, okay? That's what you need. And I think that's what I take away from Vic's story, is they got to fix that. And you fix that through the right acquisitions, whether it's the draft and especially free agency when you're talking about veterans, or trades maybe even, which I think they'll be active. That's what you got to do. And I don't think John Gruden and Mike Mayock don't know that, because Mike Mayock's been on his tour this week, or from the Senior Bowl, talking to the media, and he's been saying that. These guys, and he's called out his rookies and said, hey, he needs to get in the weight room more. And I understand what you're saying when you say, hey, listen, that guy shouldn't be told to have to be in the weight room. And there's definitely personal responsibility there, no question. At the same time, his teammates need to do it too. His teammates need to do it, and you need to have those vocal leaders where if you're a young defensive back and you're not doing what you're supposed to, or you're eating Cheetos instead of eating what you're supposed to, you got a guy who's a linebacker, defensive end, whatever, who's in your face like a drill sergeant asking you what the hell you're doing and why aren't you doing the right thing. That's the kind of thing they need. They need to self-police one another. And I think it happens on the Raiders. It does in some ways. But you also need to supplement that, because there's some outages there. If there wasn't outages there, players wouldn't be talking. Okay? It might be anonymously through journalists, but that's the way it works sometimes, right? That tells you you have a core in the locker room who care. And they want to get it right. And they know they need help to get it right. And so they go a little bit public that way. So I think there's positives to come out of it. And again, I don't think it's fatal. I think the Raiders can address it. They just need to address it. They just need to get it done this offseason and get this ship going where it needs to go. They've gotten off to a nice little start. Yeah, it's not where you want to be. 8-8's not, nobody should be happy with 8-8. Nobody should be safe at 8-8. But what you should do is you should start to thinking, okay, how do we now improve by two or three wins next year? That's where they need to be thinking, and they need to address it with player personnel and leadership and attitude within the organization, and I think they can do that. All right, we're going to switch gears here for a few minutes. We're going to talk a little bit like we do every couple weeks here with our good friend, attorney Michael Troiano, who is a criminal defense attorney here in Las Vegas. You can check him out at TroianoVegasLaw.com. He joins us now on the Newsmaker line. Michael, how you doing on this Friday, man?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Well, this story, and we're going to hit on this story because even a lot of folks in Raider Nation, because it's NFL related, we're talking about this because it's so just aberrant and crazy, at least from a perspective of what this young man is being accused of. That is offensive lineman Chad Wheeler, who was of the Seattle Seahawks. They immediately dropped him when these charges were filed. The charges filed against him, Michael, were for felony domestic violence. And if you read the story, apparently what happened The police were called to his home in Kent, Washington, approximately quarter to 10 one night. Wheeler viciously attacked his victim, which was reported to be his girlfriend, in her bedroom, strangling her at times with both hands. And she lost consciousness. Now, of course, the victim texted her friends, they called 911, and they got the police over there. But Michael, a couple questions here. First of all, as disgusting as it sounds, and nobody wants to ever see this from any human being, let alone an NFL football player, but these are all accusations, and it'll be taken care of in court. But when you look at this situation, he choked out his girlfriend, who passed out twice, and he's charged with felony domestic violence. Talk about felony domestic violence versus other, and why wasn't he charged with attempted murder if he choked her till she passed out?
A couple good questions. So first off, this is Washington State, and I'm not a licensed attorney there, so I'll just use the vernacular that I'm familiar with here in the state of Nevada.
Right.
So the difference between a felony domestic violence and a misdemeanor domestic violence can come about one of two ways. A misdemeanor domestic violence would be charged if it was only your first or second offense within a seven-year period, and there was no substantial bodily harm, there was no choking or strangling, which is alleged in this case, or there was no use of a weapon, then it would be a misdemeanor. But I don't care if it's your first or your 15th brush with the law, if you are accused of using a weapon, the victim is alleged to have substantial bodily injury, or there is choking, those are three different ways in which in Nevada you'd be charged with domestic violence, either via strangling, as I just stated, and the other terms, and those would be, in fact, felony charges. As to your question of why he has not been charged with attempted murder, who knows? He may be, and that's something that I tell a lot of clients when they come into my office. They'll get arrested, they get booked, they bail out, and they'll say, oh, I got booked with all these charges, or I only got booked with this one charge. That's just what the cops are submitting to the charging agency, the district attorney's office. And once they receive that information, it's their job to review it and see, do they need to remove some charges, we call it denying charges, or do they need to amend or add several charges. So that may still be on the books for him coming up. We'll see.
Yeah, it's crazy. I know he was appeared in court on Monday. They set bail at $400,000, and he was released on bail on Tuesday morning. Jail records show he can't have contact, obviously, with the woman. He did issue an apology, basically saying, quote, I was deeply sorry for the pain and suffering that I've caused. The most important thing right now is that she gets the care she needs and I get help. Both are happening. In these cases, when you have this thing, you know, and again, we tend to convict people, and I'm not saying he's not guilty because I don't know the truth, right? Until you get all the evidence and you hear what happens. But we've talked about this on the show with you before, Michael. You get convicted in social media before things happen. And when you have a case like this where it's domestic violence, which is, you know, the most emotional type of stuff that you see, what do people have to consider when they start looking at this, you know, from our perspective, where we're just disgusted by what he's accused of doing?
Are you talking about the media or just people in general?
No, us in general. I mean, as consumers, yeah, who read this and are like, hey, because, you know, you represent people who are accused of crimes. And so sometimes, you know, I think we lose our ability to think about, well, we have a system and it works a certain way to make sure that you're, sure, innocent until proven guilty. And again, I'm not excusing what this guy did or is accused of doing. But I'm just wondering, again, if we quickly jump to this before we have all the facts.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of times where, again, we, like you mentioned, we discussed this before on the show, where you'll see an article in the paper or a tweet or whatever it may be, and you're just like, oh my goodness, like this all must have happened just like this. But then you actually get the file and you look at the police report and the evidence, and it may not be the case. And again, I've only read what's on the media. I haven't had access to the actual police file, so I can't sit here and say, oh, it definitely did happen, it definitely didn't, or what happens in most cases, especially with domestic violence, that there's a lot of gray area. What I did find interesting is his tweet and apology. And from a human level, if all these accusations are true and he did that, then at the minimum he owes her an apology. And I guess it's nice to have some context, as in fact this was some bipolar manic episode. But from a defense standpoint, as an attorney, I can't imagine what his attorney's thought when they saw that. I know almost for a fact that they didn't advise them to send out that apology. That's just something that you don't do. I have cases where clients will be asked to write a letter to the victim apologizing by the police, and it's essentially a way of forcing you into a confession, whether false or not. But if, in fact, it was a manic episode, doesn't excuse the behavior, but hopefully as part of his punishment and or rehabilitation, he is forced to attend counseling and look into the proper medications to get, him regulated. I don't know much about his past or his history, but if this isn't really indicative of his behavior and this is truly a person who needs to be medicated, then hopefully they get him there and there's not a future victim.
We're talking to criminal defense attorney here in Las Vegas, Michael Troiano. You can reach him at 702-843-5500 or visit TroianoVegasLaw.com. And Michael, I know because you deal with domestic violence issues as well with clients, is there a good system in place in most cities for mitigation? Meaning if somebody's in an argument with their girlfriend, boyfriend, whoever it may be, mother, father, whatever, that there are resources out there that you recommend, when a client maybe has been through something like this, because I'm just wondering, because, it's such a heat of the moment thing, and I know things can escalate very quickly, but I'm just wondering, as a society, and you being an attorney and dealing with these cases a lot, is it something that we've gotten to the point where there's help for people? Like, if we have people who are considering harming themselves, there are suicide prevention mm-hmm. hotlines. Is there anything for domestic violence?
Well, the courts offer classes and rehabilitation, and not that you necessarily need to be involved in the court case to take that. I mean, I'm sure they would take your money and allow you to do that. What I would suggest is what most people do nowadays when we run into some sort of issue, either call a family member, friend, a loved one that can lean on and see if they've had experience or issues with that and give you advice, or just do it independently and go to the internet. A lot of the classes that clients of mine had to do with pursuant to plea negotiations and cases used to mainly be mandatory in person, but now with the situation that we're in, instead of them not doing anything, they've allowed to switch it over to online. So I have clients that are doing online domestic counseling. I have clients that are meeting with their therapist on Zoom. I have clients who are doing AA meetings virtually. So it's tough times, and the rates are rising. Alcohol abuse, domestic violence, you name it. Hopefully we're on the horizon to, quote-unquote, getting back to normal. But, yes, even if we're stuck in this pandemic, there's still resources to seek help, seek rehabilitation, talk to somebody. But, again, Scott, like, anything in life, and I know you're similar in this aspect, if you get to a point where you're just kind of confused or in a bad spot, usually family and friends are the first people that you reach out to see if they can kind of assist you and get you back to where you need to go. And I think we all need that from time to time. We all need to be rebalanced and recalibrated. And sometimes that's medication. Other times it's something as simple as a workout or a meditation or talking to someone who cares about you.
Yeah, and I know when we talked about the Josh Jacobs issue with his suspected and then later dropped charges of driving under the influence, is I think the NFL has a way for these guys to reach out too. So, there's always help out there, and people just need to do it. And hopefully this young man, and more importantly, the victim, the young woman, gets help and gets better. So, great. We appreciate you breaking that down for us, Michael. Have a great weekend, my friend, and we appreciate you being with us.
Absolutely. You guys too. Bye.
All right. There's attorney Michael Troiano. You can reach out to him if you need anything from a simple DUI to something more serious, like we were just talking about. Check out TroianoVegasLaw.com or call him at 702-843-5500. We're going to take a real quick break. When we come back, we got callers. We got El Paso Raider, Matt and Hoboken. You're up right after the break. This is Silver and Black today here on Raider Nation Radio.
If you believe Tom Brady did fumble and that Franco Harris didn't catch that pass and call it the Immaculate Deception, then you found the right place. This is Silver and Black today on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Welcome back on this Friday. Scott Gilbranson, Silver and Black today, powered by our good friend Sam and Ash. Visit them at samandashlaw.com. Some breaking Raiders news. They have officially added defensive staff. Some of the names we already knew were coming with Gus Bradley are now official. Ron Miles is the defensive backs coach. Richard Smith, the linebackers coach. Addison Lynch, the assistant defensive backs coach, and Ryan Miles, the defensive quality control, came all of them from the Chargers. Ryan Miles is also the son of Ron Miles, so we got a little family affair going there to join the Gruden guys in the Raiders coaching staff. All right, right back on the phone lines, we go out to El Paso Raider. El Paso Raider, you're on with Scott. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, what's going on, Scott? Thanks for taking my call, man. I love the show. You know, I try to squeeze myself in here every time I get a chance, but work sometimes doesn't allow me. You know,
sure,
but,
man.
I want to get into what's going on, man. You know, shout out to 211. You know, he's right, man. Raider Nation's a lifestyle. You know, that this is what we breathe every day. You know, we come in, we're passionate, we love our team, we go to war with our team. And we expect the players to do that for us, you know. I mean, as much as we show support for them, how can they not do that back to us, you know? And I'm not saying they don't, you know, they try probably, I don't care, but I just don't accept this. I don't accept this as a fan. If any fan accepts this and is mad at Nelly for doing what he did, it's a disgrace. Why? Because we need people like that. We need more. I can have 10 or 21 Nellies in that locker room, and I would love it. Why? Because that's what we need. This team is lacking that for years. It's been lacking that for years. And the reason why I attacked Derek Carr on that is because I've always supported Derek Carr, but today he's shown me different. He's been there for 8 years as a veteran, 8 years. He's been there the longest as any other player there. He has all the right to call anybody out, all the right. Because why? Because he's been there the longest. This is his team. If he wants to be that leader, he's got the right to do that. And people should demand his respect. Now, the other person I blamed this whole time, and I've been blaming them since he got hired, is John Gruden. This is John Gruden's fault. This is your team, John Gruden. You created this team. What's going on, man? We don't accept this. We don't need this. The Raider Nation needs it now. Next year, say we do fix the defense, and we still don't make the playoffs. What's going to happen? I'm not looking for wild cards. I'm not looking for a win in the playoffs. I'm looking for AFC championships and Super Bowls. And if we can't get to at least close to that, then we failed. We failed. Now, one thing I'm going to say, J.J. Watt, he came out, called out his teammates publicly. And that's a leader. That's a leader of a man. That's respect. So Nelly did the same thing, and it's wrong? Nah, man. Come on, Raider Nation. We're better than that.
Yeah, El Paso Raider, great call, and I agree with you, man, and I think that's what they need. They needed that accountability. They need some veteran leadership to step up and do it, so we'll see what they do. But, yeah, no, I appreciate it, man. As always, have a great weekend. All right, we go to Matt in Hoboken. Matt, what's going on, man?
I also want to talk about the Aguilar comments in the article. You know, if you remember, I suspected locker room problems for I was calling in. I kept saying, you know, there's something wrong with the mentality of this team. There's something off there that I see, especially during the slide when we were losing, you know, most of those games at the end of the season. And I really hate that I was a little vindicated on this. I mean, this information that Aguilar gave in that article, in my mind, is our worst nightmare. In my mind, as someone who coaches the game and knows about locker rooms, this is our worst nightmare, and I think it's devastating. That Nelson Aguilar quote, I believe, was a snapshot of our weight room, a quick snapshot of it, and it revealed that we have selfish players on this team, we have players who aren't accountable on this team, and we have some of the weakest leadership possible. Because if our leadership couldn't get this right, they are weak, okay, period. There's no way around that. You talked about Derek Carr a few minutes ago. If this was allowed to fester in this locker room and happen, the leadership is weak, okay? And, you know, again, reading that quote, we're far away from the culture we need to really win consistently in this league, if what Nelly's describing in that article is true. We're far away. That we're not close to the culture we need to win in this league. We may have some talented players, but that in football, you need a culture, and you need a mindset, and you need a strong locker room if you're going to win. Otherwise, things happen like they happened this year, where you lose to opponents you're better than down the stretch. But that's all about mentality. And finally, you know, I hate to be an alarmist, and I hate to be really, really negative, but you know, again, this news really bothered me today. That article really bothered me. And this can be, if this doesn't get righted, this can be the beginning of the end of Gruden's second tenure here, I believe. And it's the only way you write something like this, in my opinion, is through major personnel changes, not minor. Because some of these guys are set in their ways. You're not going to make a selfish player unselfish. That doesn't happen often. Every once in a while, there's an exception. You're not going to make a guy who's not accountable, who's never been accountable, an accountable guy. There needs to be major personnel changes in order to fix this, and I don't know if that could happen. I hate to be a pessimist, but this is a bad day for us.
No, Matt, you're always great and thoughtful. And I know before you call, you have your thoughts really well organized, and I get it. I mean, look, you talk about culture and someone I know a lot of people in Raider Nation don't appreciate because of some of the history, but somebody that I really look up to and I talk to, and he's been on our show several times, is Michael Lombardi. And he talks about culture, right? If you read his book, he talks all about culture and the culture of winning and what it takes, what kind of people you have to be to take the steps that, for example, the Chiefs, as much as that hurts Raider fans, or the Patriots have taken to build those winning organizations. And you have to get that culture right. If you don't get that culture right, you can waste talent. We've seen that happen with the Raiders in the past. And so addressing it, it's got to be addressed in the next 4 months. I mean, it's got to be done very quickly. So, Matt, I appreciate it, man. Okay, thank you very much for joining us. Okay, we're going to take one more quick call before we go to the top of the hour break. Coming up next, too, will be Cody Benjamin from CBS Sports. It's Randy. Randy, you're on with Scott here on Silver and Black Today.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, man.
Sure.
I'm 64 years old. I moved here 10 years ago because I talked to a lot of friends, and they told me that they thought, you know, there might be a chance that the Raiders would come to Las Vegas. And I lived on the East Coast, and I came all the way out here. I came here, went to work for a couple of restaurants here, and because I just wanted to be where the Raiders were, because I was always a Raiders fan all my life. All my life I was a Raiders fan. And I come out here, and now what happens this year, you know, is very, very, so very disappointing. I mean, I called Clay Baker and talked to him a few weeks ago, and I told him, I said, the only thing I see is a lack of effort, a lack of total effort in this team. Mm. And I think him and Pritz may have got kind of peed off that morning because I told it, but I saw it in him. And, you know, when it comes down to it, it comes down to it, everything starts from the top. It starts from the top. I mean, we have a coach that says, I'm trying to find the right play. We don't need the right play. We just need somebody that's going to lead us, and we need some kind of leadership. There is no leadership in that clubhouse at all until Nelson Aguilar. You know, the guy came from out of town, and then he had to, you know.
Yeah.
And until we get leadership in the clubhouse, leadership on the team, leadership on the defense, leadership on the offense, leadership on the coaching staff, and maybe Gus Bradley will give us some leadership. But until we have that, and I moved out here to be with the Raiders, and I couldn't go here, and I wanted to go to the games, you know.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
Now with this, Allegiant Stadium open up, and I said, oh, my God, you know.
Well, so, and Randy, you know. And Randy, no, I agree with you, man, and we're up against the break here. Sorry to have to cut you off, but no, look at Randy. Randy moved here to be close to the Raiders, right? And he's asking for a commitment. And leadership from the organization, and I know El Paso Raiders said the same thing, and that's what the fans want. They'll roll with you if you lose a tough game, but if you're not showing the commitment and the dedication to all that is the history and the pride and the poise of Raider Nation, then you're in trouble. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be joined by Cody Benjamin from CBS Sports. We're going to talk about quarterbacks in the NFL, Deshaun Watson, and why he thinks that Deshaun Watson and maybe even another quarterback could potentially be a landing spot or could have a landing spot here in Las Vegas. You're with Scott here on Silver and Black Today on Raider Nation Radio.